Welcome to another deep dive with us. This time, we're going to try and unpack something pretty complex. How about we try looking at organizational change, but not in the way you usually think about it?
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah, so we use this fascinating paper that was presented at a global conference. It uses systems theory as a lens. And then we'll go even further and look at how artificial intelligence might actually be more of a communication partner than just, you know, a fancy tool.
Yeah, I love that. This paper really stood out to me because of how it uses the ideas of Niklas Luhmann. He was a sociologist who had this really unique way of looking at organizations. He called them self-referential systems.
Okay, I have to admit, self-referential system sounds a bit like something you'd find in a philosophy textbook, not like in a business meeting.
Right. It's a bit of a mind bender, but let me try to break it down. So think about it this way. Imagine any team at work.
Okay. Got it.
It's more than just the individuals on that team, right? There's a whole ecosystem of emails, meetings, documents, shared jokes, all of that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the system in action. The team is constantly creating and recreating itself through those interactions.
Okay, I'm starting to see it. So, like, the organization is kind of a living thing, constantly changing through all its communication.
You got it. And Luhmann argued that these systems are operationally closed. Now, that doesn't mean they're completely isolated from the world. They still get input from the outside. He called that structurally open. But they process that information based on their own internal logic.
Ah, so it's like they have a filter, a unique language that shapes how they interpret everything that comes in.
Yes, exactly. Which brings us to another key idea, double contingency. This is basically the idea that in any interaction, what each person does depends on what they expect the other person to do. It's a constant back and forth.
Oh, I can totally relate to that. Even in a simple meeting, everyone's always trying to read the room, figuring out the unspoken rules, adjusting your behavior based on what they think everyone else expects.
That's it. So organizations are more like, I don't know, improvisational jazz than a perfectly conducted orchestra.
Ooh, I like that analogy. So how does an organization make sense of all this complexity?
Well, that's where sense-making comes in.
Right. This is where the paper gets into how meaning is created within an organization. And they break it down into three dimensions, which I thought was really helpful.
Yeah, the three dimensions are super helpful. First, you have the factual dimension. It's like figuring out what's inside the system and what's outside. So if you're a company, this is knowing your market, your competitors, your place in the bigger picture.
So it's about defining the boundaries of the organization, right? Where it ends and the rest of the world begins.
Exactly. Then there's the temporal dimension, all about time, how the past, present, and future shape how we understand things right now.
Okay, so like if your team has, say, a history of failed projects, that might make them really hesitant to start a new one, even if it's totally different.
Yeah, good example. The past is always influencing the present. And then, of course, there's the social dimension. This is how meaning is created through, well, like we talked about with double contingency, through the interactions between people.
Okay, so all these dimensions are working together, shaping how information is interpreted, how decisions get made.
It's all connected, yeah.
Which brings us to this really meta idea, the idea of organizations observing themselves. The paper calls this first order and second order observations. I thought that was so fascinating.
Oh, yeah. That's crucial for understanding Luhmann. First order observations are just what we see happening around us, you know, like the raw data of the system.
Got it.
Second order observations, this is where you take a step back. You observe how you are observing.
So it's like being aware of your own thinking process. You notice your biases, the assumptions you're making, all the things that might be coloring your perception of the situation.
Right. It's that reflective process. And that's where real learning happens.
I see that. The paper gives this example of a statistical organization creating a work program.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
They point out that the work program itself, with all its plans and actions, is actually a second-order observation. It reflects how the organization sees itself in relation to the outside world.
Exactly. It's a statement about their identity and their purpose.
Okay, wow, we've covered a lot of ground already. From these self-referential systems to different levels of observation.
It's a lot to digest, I know.
But how does all of this actually translate into decision-making? Like, how do organizations actually make choices when they're dealing with all this complexity?
Well, this is where Luhmann gets a bit playful. He loved to point out the paradoxes that we create in organizations. We tend to think of decisions as very straightforward, right? You pick one option and the rest disappear.
Yeah, like it's a simple either.
But Luhmann argues that this is a kind of fiction. Every decision also reveals what wasn't chosen, all the paths not taken.
Yeah. And those unchosen paths actually tell you a lot about the values and priorities of the organization, right? It shows what they consider important, even if they don't say it out loud.
Exactly. And the paper talks about how organizations deal with this paradox. Luhmann called it deparadoxification. We come up with ways to kind of hide the complexity of decisions.
Okay, how do you hide a decision? Give me an example.
Well, one way is by attributing the decision to a single person. You say, the CEO decided this, when in reality, it was probably a much messier process involving lots of people and factors.
Ah, so it's like creating this myth of the all-powerful decision maker to make things seem simpler and cleaner than they actually are.
Exactly. And then there are decision premises, which also play into this.
Oh, yes, decision premises. Those are all the rules, frameworks, plans, and guidelines that organizations put in place, right?
Exactly. They act like a filter, narrowing down the options and guiding people toward acceptable choices.
So they create a sense of predictability, a sense of order, even if the reality of decision-making is much more complex. But wait a minute. Are decision premises also a form of second-order observation?
You're catching on. They are. They represent the organization's attempt to understand and manage its environment, to try and make sense of all the chaos.
Okay, my brain is definitely doing gymnastics now. We've gone from these self-referential systems to decision paradoxes to filters for making choices. I can see how systems thinking can get really deep, really fast.
It definitely challenges our usual way of thinking about organizations. And speaking of challenges, this paper has a really cool case study. It's about a training course in Bangladesh that used systems thinking to approach change in a totally different way.
Okay, I was hoping we'd get to that.
Yeah.
This is where things get really practical. Let's hear about how they actually put this theory into practice.
So this training course was focused on quality improvement. It was for the Bangladesh National Statistical System. But instead of just lecturing people about rules and regulations, they took a much more engaging, interactive approach.
Okay, but how do you even teach something like quality management from a systems theory perspective? It seems like a kind of an odd pairing.
Right. That's what makes it so interesting. They actually used the training class itself as a mini organization, a system with its own unique dynamics and interactions.
Ah, so they weren't just teaching about quality. They were creating an experience of quality within the class itself.
Exactly. They really facilitated this process of what they called resonance, where the participants' understanding emerged through their interactions with each other and the material, and they emphasized cognitive capacity.
Cognitive capacity.
Yeah. It's not just about individual intelligence, but the system's ability to learn and adapt as a whole.
So it was about building the collective knowledge of the entire statistical system rather than just focusing on individuals.
Cool.
So how did they actually do that?
Well, they introduced both what they called generic knowledge and encouraged emergent knowledge.
Okay. I think I need a little more explanation there.
Sure. So generic knowledge is like, you know, those widely applicable frameworks and guidelines that exist outside the organization. Think of like industry best practices.
Okay. So that's the external stuff.
Yeah. Then there's emergent knowledge, which is knowledge that's built from within based on the specific context and experiences of the organization.
So it's like taking those general principles and figuring out how to actually make them work in your real world situation. Makes sense.
Right. And the course used a really neat process. It involved both individual and group sense making. So participants would first reflect on a specific quality challenge on their own. They'd use those three dimensions of sense making that we talked about earlier, the factual, temporal, and social.
Got it.
Then they'd come together in groups, they'd share their insights, and kind of negotiate a collective understanding of the problem and potential solutions.
Oh, that's neat. So it was like creating space for that double contingency we talked about to play out. Everyone's individual understanding was being shaped and reshaped through their interactions with others.
Precisely. And this process helped them connect the dots between those generic knowledge guidelines and their own, you know, on-the-ground experiences. So it created emergent knowledge that was actually relevant and useful for them.
This is such a great example of how, like, what seems like really abstract theory can actually be used to create a much more effective way of learning and, you know, actually changing how things work.
Yeah, I agree. It challenges that old top-down model of training and development. And speaking of challenging assumptions, I think it's time to dive into how AI fits into all of this. The paper makes a really interesting case for seeing AI not just as, you know, a tool for automation, but as a potential communication partner within an organization.
Okay, now we're getting into the really future-forward stuff. But before we jump into AI, I think it's worth revisiting the idea of communication itself. How does communication even work in the context of artificial intelligence? It feels like a whole different ballgame.
It's a great question. And this is where the idea of what the authors call artificial communication comes in. Remember how we talked about resonance in human interaction, that back and forth dance of expectations and adjustments?
Yes, where what each person does depends on what they think the other person is expecting.
Right. Well, with AI, it's more like virtual resonance. Mm-hmm. AI systems are generating responses based on patterns they've learned from huge data sets, but they're not actually understanding what they're saying in the way that we do as humans.
So AI is kind of mimicking human communication patterns, but without that deeper level of shared meaning.
Exactly. It's a different kind of communication. But even if AI doesn't truly get us in that human sense, can it still be a valuable communication partner, especially when it comes to making decisions in organizations? That's the big question, isn't it? And this is where AI Catch for Statistics comes in.
Yes. AI Catch. This is that AI tool that the paper uses as a kind of example of how AI can be integrated into organizational change processes.
Exactly. And it seems like AI Catch has two main functions, learning and problem solving.
Okay. So on the learning side, it sounds like you can use AI Catch to interact with like massive amounts of data, asking questions, exploring different data sets, things like that.
It's like having a super-powered research assistant who can instantly access and analyze information that would take us, you know, forever to go through.
Wow, that's amazing. And then what about problem solving? How does AI Catch help with that?
Well, it can analyze issues, identify potential solutions, and even suggest changes based on its analysis.
So it's kind of like having a consultant who can look at a problem and say, hey, here are a few things you could try based on what I've learned from looking at similar situations.
Exactly. But it's super important to remember that AI Catch doesn't actually make the decisions. It's a tool to support human decision making, not to replace it.
Right. So it's about combining the best of both worlds. You have human intuition, experience, judgment, and then AI's ability to process information and see patterns that we might miss.
That's the idea. It's about creating a more robust and, well, a more informed decision-making process.
I'm really curious about those case studies that the paper mentions,
mm-hmm.
The ones where AI Catch was actually used in real-world settings. Those seem super relevant.
Yeah, me too. They sound really interesting. One case study focused on using AI Catch to improve statistical law.
Oh, wow. That's cool. How did that work?
So imagine a statistical organization is struggling with some aspect of their, like, data collection practices.
Okay, I'm imagining.
They could take their current law and input it into AI Catch along with, you know, the specific issues they're facing. And AI Catch could analyze the law, compare it to, you know, best practices out there, and suggest revisions.
So it's like having an expert consultant who can instantly review and critique legislation and say, hey, here are some potential problems and here's how you might fix them.
It's a great way to think about it. It shows how AI can be used not just for automation, but to actually improve the quality of human expertise and decision making.
Yeah, that's really impressive. So what was the other case study about?
The other one focused on using AI Catch to essentially chat with a quality assessment.
Wait, chat with a quality assessment? That sounds wild. How is that even possible?
So let's say an organization has done a quality assessment, you know, using some kind of established framework. They can take the results of that assessment and put them into AI Catch.
Okay.
And then they can use AI Catch to explore the findings in more depth, you know, ask clarifying questions, and really get a deeper understanding of what the assessment is actually telling them about their strengths and weaknesses.
So it's like using AI to have a dialogue with the data itself to try and unpack the meaning of that quality assessment.
Exactly. It's about enhancing the organization's ability to, you know, reflect on itself and learn.
That's incredible. This has been so fascinating so far. But I have to wonder, are there obstacles to actually adopting this new mindset, this idea of integrating AI in this way? It seems like a pretty big shift from how most organizations operate today.
It's a great question. And yeah, the paper does acknowledge that there are some potential challenges. I think one of the biggest is that this requires, you know, a pretty fundamental shift in our thinking. We have to move away from that traditional top-down command and control model of management.
Right, because that model doesn't really fit with the idea of organizations as these complex emergent systems.
Exactly. And we also have to change the conversation around AI.
Also,
we need to shift it away from those fears of job displacement and automation and start focusing on the potential for AI to be a tool for empowerment and, you know, for actually making our work better.
So it's about seeing AI as a partner in progress, not as a threat. But that requires a real change in mindset, both individually and collectively.
And that's where the real work begins. You know, one of the biggest obstacles is just like getting people to think differently about organizations. We're so used to that traditional hierarchy, right? Leaders at the top calling all the shots.
Yeah, it's like we're programmed to see organizations as machines. Mm-hmm. With all the parts working together in this predictable way.
Exactly. But systems theory shows us that organizations are more like living organisms. They're constantly adapting, evolving, responding to their environment. And that means we need new ways of thinking about leadership and change.
So instead of trying to like control the system from the top down, it's more about influencing the system's natural evolution.
Yes. It's about understanding those feedback loops, the interconnectedness of everything. And recognizing that change can come from unexpected places, not just from the top.
That makes me think about that Bangladesh training course again. They really seem to understand this idea of influencing a system from within.
Absolutely. They created this environment where participants could experience those systems principles in action. It wasn't just about absorbing information. It was about actively creating knowledge.
And one of the things they emphasized was the importance of decision premises.
Right.
I'm starting to see how that concept plays a key role in shaping change within the system.
Yeah, decision premises are powerful because they act as this kind of invisible hand guiding all the decisions that people make. If you want to change the system, you need to understand those decision premises.
So it's not just about changing individual behaviors. It's about changing the underlying assumptions and frameworks that are shaping those behaviors.
Exactly, and that's where AI can play a really interesting role.
Okay, let's talk about that. We've laid the groundwork with systems theory, but I'm really curious to explore how AI can be a partner in navigating these complex systems, especially given that AI doesn't really think the same way we do.
Right, and that's why it's so important to remember that we're talking about a different kind of communication. It's not about AI like understanding our feelings or intentions. It's about recognizing patterns and responding to us in ways that can be helpful.
So it's less about having a heart-to-heart with a robot, and more about using AI as a tool to help us see things that we might otherwise miss. Kind of like how AI Catch was used in those case studies we were talking about.
Exactly. Remember how AI Catch was able to analyze statistical law and suggest improvements? Imagine being able to use a similar tool to analyze the decision premises within your organization.
Ooh, that's interesting. You can start to see the hidden assumptions and power dynamics that are shaping how decisions are made, even if people aren't consciously aware of them.
It is powerful. And think about the chatting with a quality assessment example. What if you could use AI to have a similar dialogue with your organization's data? You could uncover all sorts of insights about how the system is functioning, where the bottlenecks are, where the potential for growth is.
It's almost like using AI to hold up a mirror to the organization, revealing blind spots and opportunities that might not be apparent to us just from our own human perspective.
It's a whole new way of thinking about organizational development and change management. Instead of relying just on intuition and experience, we can use data and AI to make more informed decisions.
But that brings up another potential obstacle, the human factor. Are people even ready to embrace this kind of partnership with AI? There's still a lot of fear and distrust around AI, especially when it comes to people's jobs and decision-making.
That's a valid concern. I think a lot of it comes down to how we talk about AI. We need to move away from this idea of AI as a threat and start seeing it as a tool that can enhance our capabilities, not replace them.
It's like instead of being afraid that robots are coming for our jobs, we should be asking, how can AI help us do our jobs better?
Exactly. AI can help us process information more efficiently, identify patterns we might miss, make more informed decisions. But it's still up to us humans to set the goals, interpret the results, and decide what actions to take.
So it's about finding that sweet spot, that balance between human judgment and AI insights.
Yes, it's about creating a partnership where each side is leveraging its strengths.
I think this idea of partnership is key. We need to stop thinking of AI as something separate from us and start seeing it as a potential extension of our own intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, a way to augment our abilities and expand our understanding of the world.
I love that. It connects back to that idea of cognitive capacity we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. AI can help us expand the cognitive capacity of organizations, letting us process more information, make more nuanced decisions, adapt more effectively to change.
This is all incredibly exciting, but I'm also realizing that this shift to systems thinking combined with AI, has the potential to be pretty disruptive. It challenges so many of our assumptions about how organizations should function.
It's a paradigm shift for sure. And like any major change, it's going to come with challenges and resistance. But I think the potential benefits are too great to ignore.
So what are some of the specific obstacles that organizations might face as they try to make this shift? And what can they do to overcome them?
Well, for starters, there's the issue of control. Leaders who are used to being in command might resist the idea of giving up some of that control to a more decentralized system.
It's like letting go of the reins and trusting that the horse knows where it's going.
Exactly. And that can be scary for some leaders. But it's important to remember that letting go of control doesn't mean losing control. It's about shifting to a different kind of control, one that's based on influence, guidance, and shared understanding.
So instead of trying to dictate every decision from the top, it's about creating a culture where people are empowered to make decisions at the local level based on their understanding of the system.
Yes. It's about distributing decision-making power throughout the organization, creating a more agile and responsive system. And AI can be a valuable tool in that process. It can help us identify the right people to make decisions, provide them with the information they need, even suggest potential solutions.
It's like AI can be a facilitator, helping to connect people, information, and decision-making power in a way that's more aligned with a systems-based approach.
I like that analogy. And another obstacle is just a lack of understanding. Many people still have a very limited view of what AI is and what it can do. They might see it as either this futuristic fantasy or a threat to their jobs rather than as a practical tool.
Right. We need to demystify AI.
Yeah.
Make it more accessible. Show people how it can be used to solve real-world problems and make their lives easier.
Exactly. And we also need to address those concerns about job displacement head on, you know? It's important to be honest about the fact that some jobs will likely be automated, but we also need to emphasize the new opportunities that AI will create.
So it's about helping people develop the skills they need to thrive in an AI-powered world. Skills like critical thinking, creativity, problem-solving, emotional intelligence. The things that machines can't replicate.
Absolutely. We need to invest in education and training so people have the skills they need to succeed in this new landscape.
This is such a crucial point. We can't just focus on the technology itself. We have to focus on the human side. How do we prepare people for this shift? How do we make sure that everyone benefits from the opportunities that AI presents?
It's a complex challenge, but I think it starts with changing the narrative. We need to move away from this fear-based us versus them mentality and start framing AI as a tool for collaboration and empowerment.
It's about seeing AI as a partner in progress, not a threat to our existence. And it's about using this technology to create a more just, equitable, and sustainable world for everyone.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's a great note to end on.
It is. This has been such a thought-provoking conversation. I feel like I've gained a whole new perspective on organizational change systems thinking and AI. What are your final thoughts for our listeners as we wrap up this deep dive?
I would just encourage everyone to stay curious. The world is changing rapidly, and AI is going to play a bigger and bigger role in our lives. Instead of fearing the unknown, let's approach it with a sense of wonder and a willingness to learn and adapt. Who knows what amazing possibilities await us?
Beautifully said. We've reached the end of our deep dive, but the conversation doesn't have to end here. We encourage you to share your thoughts, insights, and questions. How might these ideas about systems theory and AI change your approach to problem solving or decision making in the future? We'd love to hear from you.
And as always, happy diving.
You know, what's really striking me after all of this is that it's not just about technology, right? It's about like a fundamental shift in how we think about organizations and change. We almost need like a new vocabulary, a new mental model for all of this.
I totally agree. We're so used to thinking in these straight lines, you know, cause and effect. But systems theory is showing us that the world is way more fluid and dynamic. Change doesn't happen in a straight line. It emerges from all the interactions within the system.
Yeah, it's like that butterfly effect, right?
Yeah.
One tiny change can ripple out and have a massive impact somewhere else, completely unexpected.
Exactly. And that's why those traditional approaches to change management, they often fail. They're trying to force change from the top down,
yeah.
But they're not really understanding the complexity of what's happening in the system.
It's like trying to steer a sailboat in a hurricane by only focusing on the rudder. You got to pay attention to the wind, the waves, the currents, like the whole ecosystem.
Such a good analogy. And this is where AI can be so powerful. It can help us see those patterns, those connections that we might completely miss.
So it's not about AI making decisions for us. It's about AI helping us, you know, make better decisions by showing us a more complete picture.
Yeah, exactly. Augmenting our intelligence, not replacing it. And recognizing that the best solutions, you know, often come from a blend of human intuition and those AI insights.
Honestly, this whole conversation has been like eye-opening. I'm finding myself looking at the world through this systems lens now.
Yeah.
And it's changing how I think about everything. my work, you know, even the bigger societal problems we're all facing.
That's amazing to hear. Yeah. That's exactly what systems thinking can do. It gives you this framework for understanding complexity, and it empowers you to see new possibilities, things that you might not have seen before.
Okay, so as we're wrapping up this deep dive into organizational change, systems theory, and AI, what are like the key takeaways you want listeners to walk away with?
Well, first, I hope they'll start to see the world around them, their workplaces especially, as a complex system, not like a machine, but as an organism with its own, you know, internal logic.
So recognizing the change isn't linear, it's more of this messy, you know, emergent thing. It comes from all of the interactions happening within the system.
Yes. And we need to move away from this idea that we can control everything. We have to be more experimental, more adaptive.
And lastly, I think this paper really challenges us to rethink the role of AI.
Right.
It's not about being afraid of AI. It's about understanding how it can be a partner, a way to enhance human intelligence, not replace it.
So well said. It's about using AI to navigate complexity, to make better decisions, and ultimately to create a better future for all of us.
I love that. Well, on that note, we've reached the end of our deep dive. Thanks for joining us on this exploration.
Yes, thanks for listening, everyone.
We encourage you to keep thinking about these ideas. Share your thoughts, insights, questions. How might systems theory and AI change your approach to things?
Until next time, happy diving.